This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Supporters of North Carolina's House Bill 2 say it protects public safety and health. The law requires people to use restrooms that correspond with the gender listed on their birth certificates. But opponents point to research that says policies that restrict access based on sexual orientation or gender identity lead to worse health outcomes for the LGBT community. Shoshana Goldberg is a doctoral candidate at the Gilling School of Global Public Health at UNC Chapel Hill. She recently co-authored an article in the Washington Post that examines the potential health impact of House Bill 2 and similar measures in other states. And she joins me now on the State of Things. Welcome, Shoshana. Good to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
What does this? What does current research say about the attitudes that transgender people, in terms of transgender people and public restrooms?
Sorry, can you?
So the current research about a bill like HB 2, it's meant to, according to its proponents, protect people, who are not transgender. But it, apparently, there are health impacts and safety impacts for people who are transgender. When these kind of restrictions are actually enacted. Tell us about that.
Yeah. And I think there's two different ways that bills like HB 2 can have an impact on trans health. So first of all, there's a direct impact. So we know from existing studies of transgender, often adults, we don't have as much data on transgender adolescents. We know that when transgender adults are required to use gendered bathrooms that correspond to their biological sex as opposed to their preferred gender identity, there's risk. So there was a study done in D.C. which found that 9% of trans adults surveyed had actually been physically harassed in a bathroom or had been, you know, beat up or assaulted, and over 50% had been verbally harassed. And beyond that, over 50% had experienced some sort of health outcome because they had avoided bathrooms, so things like a UTI or a kidney infection, because they had not gone to a bathroom for fear of their safety. We know among transgender adolescents that over 60% avoid bathrooms at school because they feel unsafe and they're worried for their personal safety if they do use a bathroom. So we're seeing already that even in the absence of bills that require bathroom use, people who do use, who are forced to use bathrooms, have a direct threat to their safety, or a perceived fear of a threat to their safety that may actually be realized. We know also that transgender kids are more likely to be harassed and bullied and beat up at school, and often that happens at places like bathrooms and locker rooms where there isn't as much adult supervision and there isn't as much monitoring. So when we say that we want to require a transgender student to use a bathroom that based on their biological sex as opposed to their preferred gender identity, you're actually putting somebody at a direct physical risk to their safety, often without any, and the, you know, there's been no evidence that a transgender kid has ever gone into a bathroom and beat somebody else up, or a person pretending to be transgender and going into a bathroom and harassing somebody or beating somebody up or sexually assaulting somebody. I mean, we were talking about this earlier, that sexual assaults don't really occur from random people hiding out in bathroom stalls waiting to jump the next person who walks in. So there's no actual threat to general safety, but there is direct threat to the safety of trans people when they're required to use bathrooms.
And the no actual threat is something that, that could have been demonstrated had there been hearings, had there been actual full hearings on what this bill would do. There are over 200 cities across America that have similar legislation. We could have asked the question and done the research, what has your experience been? The reporting so far on it, because we didn't have a public hearing in the state of North Carolina that would have made this evidence public. But the reporting has been they haven't had a problem.
Right.
They haven't had a problem in years of this kind of legislation in over 200 cities. As I say, we weren't privy to the documentation because there was no hearing in North Carolina. But there is evidence that people who are trans, that in that community there are there is actual assaults in the restroom. So this is kind of interesting stuff. But then you also say there's damage that may already be done just because of the public discussion and the way this particular issue was framed as a safety issue. There's something unsafe about those people.
Right. And I think that there's this sort of like nefarious psychological aspect that I think needs to be discussed, particularly when it comes to, you know, teenagers and kids. So when we say that we need to pass a bill that is explicitly anti-trans, it is explicitly done in a way to deny transgender access to bathrooms, the way that it was phrased about protecting safety and privacy was based on this entire argument that we need to protect the hypothetical safety and privacy of our teenage daughters and our wives and sisters, because this bill will open them up to, you know, sexual deviants and perverts. And when we're saying that, we're also explicitly equating transgender people with sexual deviants and perverts. And so what does a message like that, you know, what does that say? What do you think would, how do you think you would react if you're, you know, a 12-year-old kid and you are trans and you suddenly have been told that if you're allowed to use the bathroom, that's essentially equivalent to like a, you know, a,
Oh, no, no, you've definitely been equated with child molester. And so, and we could speculate on that. We could imagine the way the legislators did when they gave us this bill, because we didn't have the evidence. Or you could actually look at some evidence. What has been the response? I understand that, for instance, call centers and suicide hotlines have received, they've experienced a spike in calls as a result of this debate.
Yeah. So there was an article that just came out yesterday in the Daily Beast, which was an interview with Trans Lifeline, which is a national hotline that deals with like suicidal attempt and social support hotline for often trans people or primarily trans people. And they've seen a doubling in calls since HB2. And we've seen similar responses anecdotally from LGBT centers across the state. So we're seeing already that there's a higher need for resources or that people are feeling the impact of this bill and it's impacting their psychological well-being. It's making them more likely to want to kill themselves, because what it does is it opens up a like legally sanctioned and very public space for very charged anti-trans rhetoric.
No, we saw with Kurt Schilling, for instance. I mean, he got fired from ESPN for the kind of stuff that he was putting out that demonized trans people. And ESPN figured it out right away and fired him on the spot. We are talking today about the health impact of HB2 on the state of things. My guest is Shoshana Goldberg. She's a doctoral candidate at UNC's Chapel Hill's Gilling School. You know, research has shown that there is a much higher risk of suicide in transgender people. Can you tell us what that is and then whether or not we can predict suicide rates and expansion of that suicide rate based on this legislation?
Right. So we have not as much data on transgender adolescents as we do with on transgender adults, but the National Transgender Discrimination Survey, which was a survey of over 7,000 transgender adults 18 and over across 50 states in Washington, D.C., found that 41% of the sample had ever attempted suicide. And that was compared to a rate of less than 2% in the general adult population. So we know that to begin with, before any of these bills were even on the table, there's a much higher rate of suicide among this population. And that's because, in general, people who are trans have much, have like a lot of stigmatization. They've been victimized. They may be denied employment in states where it's legally sanctioned to do so. They have higher rates of sexual assault, of being victimized, of being bullied in school, at work, in public accommodations. So this is a population that already has higher rates of suicide. And so what we did was we wanted to estimate what would be potential suicide rates after a bill like this is passed. So what we did is we looked for several studies that looked at suicide rates in different scenarios. So, for example, in that National Transgender Discrimination Survey I just discussed, two different studies have used that data and have found that among, for example, transgender adults who attended college who were denied bathroom access at college, they had a 60.5% suicide attempt rate in this population. And similarly, among adults who have been denied access to a bathroom at work, the suicide rate jumped up to 59%. And we similarly have seen in studies of lesbian, gay, and bisexual adolescents that students who live in counties that are more or less inclusive policies, so that was sort of looking at things like presence of GSAs or gay straight alliances in schools, or the presence of anti-bullying laws that included sexual orientation or gender identity as a protected class, that LGB adolescents in less inclusive counties had higher suicide rates, actually going up to 31% of LGB students in these counties had attempted suicide, compared to 19% in those with moderate climates. So we're seeing already that in existing studies, there have been increased suicide risk among those who have been denied access to bathrooms or existed within these sort of hostile political climates. And so what we did is using that and kind of extrapolating from estimates of the size of the transgender population and applying these sort of pre-post rates to estimating the number of suicide attempts and suicide completions, that there could be anywhere between 38 and 86 additional suicide completions expected in the six states that, as of press time, when I wrote the article, were considering or had adopted anti-trans legislation. And here in North Carolina, that number is between 9 and 21 additional suicides. So that's not suicides total. That is additional suicides on top of the ones that are already expected.
And those are completed suicides, not attempts.
Completed, yeah.
Projected. Shoshana, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Shoshana Goldberg is a doctoral candidate in the Gilling School of Global Public Health at UNC Chapel Hill. You can find a link to her article in the Washington Post at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, North Carolina author Robert Morgan previews his newest novel about a slave who escaped through the Appalachian Mountains. You'll hear about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.